I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
For decades, he's been the king of Memphis.
It's good to be king of your own little town.
You want to see the king? You think anybody would pay to come down and see a sawed-off runt? Bug-eyed Bill Dundee? No, they come to see me, baby.
King of them all, right here it is, baby. The greatest wrestler that ever lived and ever will step into a ring. You're looking at him, and I am the champion.
And you may be familiar with his work in WWE, too.
I'll show you who the real king of the World Wrestling Federation is. It's the most electrifying move. It's Sports Entertainment Today. Oh, the people devil!
For 50 years, he's been known all over the world as one of wrestling's biggest stars. And now, he's decided to share all of his favorite stories from his 50 years in wrestling with you.
Tell me a story.
Why don't you put your false teeth in backward and eat yourself to death?
Oh, that's one of my favorites.
This is the Jerry Lawler Show. Welcome to the Jerry Lawler Show. On Monday, the King talked all about the 50-year anniversary show that's coming up, promoted by his buddy Burt Prentice, who joined the show with the King and Sean Reedy. Today, in continuing to talk about that show, the King wanted to pay tribute to his old friend who just passed away, the legendary James Harris, otherwise known as Kamala. So here's the King continuing to talk about the 50 years of Jerry Lawler's celebration while paying tribute to his fallen comrade, Kamala.
One of the names that is going to be there is WWE Hall of Famer Coco Beware.
Okay, great.
So Coco is going to be there, but the reason I mention him now is the fact that Coco was the one who was very close to James Harris, Kamala, and Coco was the one that called us immediately after James passed away with the word that James had died this past week. And, man, that was a guy that I can't remember what year we started James. But, I mean, what a story we had with that guy. Never forget that one night at the Mid-South Coliseum, I'm just standing there watching the matches, kind of peeking through the curtain. And so the crowd couldn't see me watching the earlier matches. And somebody tapped me on the shoulder. And I turned around, and as I turned around, I had to look up, and he's kind of looking down at me. And I was quite honestly, I was a little bit scared there at first. I went, yeah. And all of a sudden, this voice came out, and it was like immediately I said, this guy's like a giant teddy bear. And I looked at him, and a big smile came on my face, and I said, well, Sugar Bear, has anybody else seen you here tonight? And he said, no, sir, I just came in the back door. And I said, well, here's what I want you to do. Here's my number. Give me your number. And then I want you to go home. Don't let anybody see you. And we're going to call you. And immediately we took James. We called him up, brought him up to Nashville, took him out to Jerry Jarrett's farm at the time. And Jerry Jarrett, just by coincidence, Jerry Jarrett in his office, Jerry was a big hunter, and he had gone big game hunting in the past and that sort of thing. And he had this big African mask. Of course, he had a bunch of animal heads hanging on his wall. You know, the big game, the stuffed animal heads that he had shot over the years. So anyway, but he had this big African mask and this big shield type thing, African shield, as part of the decorations on his wall in his den. And so I sat down with a National Enquirer magazine. I looked up the country of Uganda on the map, and there was a bunch of cities in Uganda, and one of the cities was Kamala. So that's where we came up with the name Kamala, and he was from supposed to be from Uganda, and he was a giant. He was just a just a huge physical specimen. So we called him. We came up with the name the Kamala, the Ugandan giant. We put this little loincloth on him. We made a spear for him. We put this shield and this mask on him. We went out to the this little pond behind Jerry Jarrett's house, and we threw some dry ice out into the water, and we had James walk out maybe about 10 feet out into the – it wasn't a deep pond or anything. We had James walk about 10 feet out into the pond. We had our cameraman there, and boom, he starts filming James walking towards the camera with this smoke and this water behind him. It looked like something out of an African jungle scene or a movie. And then we put the voiceover on it, you know, Kamala, the Ugandan giant. And we called up J.J. Dillon, because he was working over in the Carolinas. And we told J.J., we want you to send us in an interview, and because we don't want anybody local to introduce Kamala. We want him to be, you know, something new, something that nobody's ever seen before, and something where people will believe that he actually is coming in from Uganda. So J.J. Dillon cut this great promo talking about how he'd been traveling all over the world looking for the top wrestling talent, and he's finally found this guy that will be able to come into Memphis and put an end to Jerry the King Lawler. And so, boom, we cut that. We had J.J. say that promo, and then all of a sudden we showed this film, it was probably less than a minute long film of James, you know, with that mask on, coming up out of that water, that steaming water. He pulled that mask off, and there was that face, that painted face with the teeth. We showed that Saturday morning. Coliseum sold out Monday night. Everybody wanted to come out and see this amazing Ugandan giant. And so that's the story of how we got started. He was tremendous. You know, that's in the wrestling business, we call that a gimmick. Kamala James, he loved the gimmick. He was perfect for it. And we talked before, you know, I don't know how long he had been wrestling. Not that long, I'm sure. But, you know, he just wrestled basically little independent shows, not a big deal at that point. But, you know, we sat down beforehand. I painted the face. I put the stars on his chest, the big crescent moon on his stomach, and all the teeth in the, around his mouth. We're talking as we're getting ready for the match. And I said, look, I said, James, this is the important thing. As you can see, you're not, these people are not expecting a wrestler. You're not supposed to have ever even been in a wrestling ring or even seen a wrestling ring. They're expecting somebody that they snagged out of the jungle that is coming here to just basically eat up Jerry Lawler. And I said, so don't do any wrestling moves whatsoever. I said, just pat your chest. I was thinking of it like I told him at the time. I said, pat your chest like, or beat your chest like King Kong or like Tarzan or something like that. And James, he changed that into patting his stomach, which was even better. You know, I said, don't do any wrestling moves. I said, just chop me and try to bite me. And I said, that's all our match needs to consist of. And sure enough, we went out there, and man, he tore the house down. He was so believable. He was so perfect in that gimmick. And of course, you know, we went on and did big, big business with James here in Memphis and in Tennessee. And then, of course, he went on from here to he went to Mid South. He went all over the world with that gimmick. And of course, finally, then made it up to WWE, where he main evented with Hulk Hogan, with The Undertaker, with so many of the big WWE stars, and made a huge impression and became a huge superstar with that gimmick in WWE.
Yeah, I mean, that's got to be one of your most successful creations, maybe up there with like the Rock and Roll Express, because like you mentioned, first in Memphis, I mean, just unbelievable run. He comes in, he destroys you, wins the title, runs through like the whole roster, building up like through the whole summer of 82, I think it was, to you finally getting another shot and finally defeating him. But then, like you mentioned, I mean, he was big lots of places, and he went all the way to, you know, Madison Square Garden with Hogan. An amazing run that all started just with an idea you had in a video in Jerry Jarrett's yard.
Yeah, it really was. And you're right, I was always proud of that. And I was always proud of James because, you know, he realized, and he got it. He realized that, you know, it was something that he made into the perfect gimmick. I mean, a lot of times gimmicks get put on people that they're not by promoters, basically. You know, the promoter comes up with an idea and says, hey, here, you do this. And they're not always crazy about it, and they don't always make the best of it sometimes. But then sometimes one thing that comes to mind is the time when Dusty Rhodes went up to when Dusty Rhodes first went up to the WWE. Oh my gosh, they put the gimmick on him where he was wearing polka dots, or what was that? What was the thing that?
Yeah, he had the yellow polka dots.
Yeah, the yellow polka dots, and then, you know, sometimes gimmicks were created to sort of maybe not make the character look the best. I'll never forget Terry Taylor. What did they make him? The Red Rooster.
Yeah.
Things like that. But and you know what? Sometimes, I mean, if it wasn't the right person, somebody may have looked at this gimmick and said, no, I'm not going to do that. That's stupid. I'm not I'm not from Africa, that sort of thing. But it was that was a gimmick. Of course, he wasn't a cannibal or anything. But that's where the entertainment value comes from. It was like an actor playing a role. You know, I mean, all of these actors, like The Rock in Hollywood or John Cena. You know, they're not really who they portray when they're doing a movie. You're playing a role. And James played that role. He embraced that gimmick, and he played it to the hilt. I mean, he was perfect, and he was great at it. And he deserved all the credit and all the money that he made throughout his career. And then, of course, unfortunately, James just had some health issues that had plagued him. And not just his entire career, but his entire life. I think James was a diabetic from the time he was a child. And that, you know, that I think probably the diabetes was the main thing that really caught up with him. He wound up, as most people know, he wound up becoming a double amputee. The diabetes did so much damage to him. He lost both his legs, had both his legs amputated. And then, you know, then confined to a wheelchair at his home there in Mississippi. And then the last few years, he's just been in failing health. I know we talked about him last year at the Cauliflower Alley Club. Some of the people there got together at the Cauliflower Alley Club, and I think they paid off the balance on James's house down in Mississippi where he had a home to live in for the rest of his life. And but then he had heart problems, and then towards the end he was on dialysis. And so it was still kind of a shock because I hadn't been keeping up with him that much lately. But then Coco Ware called last week and said, you know, that James had passed away. And Coco was close with him and kept up with him. And the crazy thing was, all of a sudden the word came out. I saw this a couple of places that he died of COVID, COVID-19. But Coco said that wasn't the case, that he had all of these other health issues. But that's just what I heard from Coco, that it wasn't that. But anyway, we lost a very talented guy that made a big impression in the wrestling business over the years.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal. Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
This is the Jerry Lawler Show.
What will you remember about him kind of behind the scenes as a person that you worked with?
I really like James. I was close to him in the fact that while he and I were working together, I think for probably the first, I don't know if it was 6 months, but for the first few months, I had to paint the makeup on him every single night, which I enjoyed doing, really did. But then, you know, he would just sit there and talk. We would talk about all kind of crazy things during that time. And I was finally glad when he was able to, start applying his own makeup and everything. And of course, when we got ready to leave the Memphis area, I told him, I said, James, you're going to have to do that. You're going to have to learn to do this yourself. I mean, you just watch me every night and see what, and I would explain to him each step and what kind of paint to use, the acrylic paint, all of this sort of stuff. He finally got down to where he could do it. But yeah, I mean, I always enjoyed his company. And then, you know, when he went to WWE, they put him with Downtown Bruno or Harvey Whippleman.
That's right.
As his man. Yeah, and they traveled together for a long, long time. And you know, he had some, I don't know if discrepancies or whatever, but in the past few years, James had some not very kind things to say about the WWE, and he said that he didn't get paid as much as the people that he wrestles and everything and that sort of thing, and that he didn't make any money while he was there. And Bruno sort of disputed that. Bruno said, I used to cash his checks for him every week, because he said James didn't have wouldn't keep a bank account, and he wanted to deal in cash and everything in cash. And he said, every Monday I would get his check, and he said, I would go to the bank and cash it. And he said, every week it was $15,000, $13,000. And, you know, big checks, especially when he was, you know, wrestling against The Undertaker and Hogan, like you said, at Madison Square Garden. And but I think what James was implying was that sometimes when he wrestled against Undertaker, when he wrestled against Hulk Hogan, that he would say that he didn't get paid as much as they did. And that's probably true. But he was still getting paid a lot of money and still being paid very well. But that's just the way the wrestling business is. I mean, you know, if they put me in a match with oh gosh, I can't even tell you who, But I know that that's just the way it works. You know, the guy that is that seems has the bigger name or whatever is usually going to get paid more than his opponent. You know, or and that's just the way wrestling has always been through the years. But
it's like when you face Michael Cole at WrestleMania.
Yeah. I certainly didn't get as big a payoff as Michael Cole, you know, because he was the bigger star.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? It's so funny. I don't think Michael and I have ever talked about what he got paid. And I've told everybody what I got paid, which was I thought an amazing payoff for just that a 9 or 11 minute match or something like that. You know, a $150,000 payoff for one match was unbelievable. But I mean, guys like, okay, so yeah, you put that into the same, I don't know if if you say the same boat or whatever, but like if I or me or Michael Cole got paid $150,000 for our match at that, I can assure you there were some people that on that same WrestleMania card that made $1 million for their match. And so, you know, sure, I could go around and say, man, oh man, I've worked on the same WrestleMania show and I didn't get paid 1/10 of what some of the guys got paid. But I mean, that's just the way the show works. That's just the way wrestling has always worked over the years. You know, the main event guys got paid more and some of the guys in the main event got paid more than their opponents. And, but anyway, that's neither here nor there. I mean, I know that James made some really good money throughout his career, and I know he at one time he used that money to buy a big 18-wheeler, and he was actually driving a truck there for a while when he sort of pretty much had retired from the ring. He was driving a truck, and you know those big 18-wheelers they cost a lot of money. But anyway, you know, that's not happy thoughts about James. You know, I'm sad that he didn't. You got to feel sorry for somebody that just had that kind of physical problems towards the end of their career. You know, leading up to their death as James did. It was I think the most recent thing I saw from James was an interview that he had done with somebody, and he's sitting, of course, in his wheelchair, and he has this big rifle, and he's laughing and everything, and he's talking about somebody coming into his house. You know, he may not be able to get up and walk, but he'll still defend his house. And he was just a good, cool guy. You know, all the way up till the end.
Absolutely. Well, you know, so sorry to hear about that. Condolences to his family and everybody affected. And rest in peace to James Harris. So we'll have some updates in the next few weeks as we get closer to the 50th anniversary on September 26th. Get more names, get some matches announced, and some things coming up.
Absolutely. I'm really, really excited about it. What else is going on in the world?
My Cubs beat up your Indians pretty good.
Oh, please, wait a minute. Come on. You're not going to bring that up today, are you?
Well,
you know, it's because Bert Prentice is a Minnesota Twins fan, and he and I go back and forth about the fact that the Twins are beating up my Indians, and now you're going to talk about the Chicago Cubs beating up my Indians. I don't know what has happened to my Indians. They're just not hitting. It's crazy. Frankie Lindor's batting average is like under 100. It's unbelievable. What is going on with my Cleveland Indians team?
Well, I'm just. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, you talked about the two games they lost to the Cubs. I sat there and watched every minute, every pitch. Every non-hit of both of those games, and after each one of them, I've said it a million times, there's another 3 hours of my life I won't get back and just be so so down and disappointed after. It's like depressing. And, you know, these times being able to not go out or not go out very much or do many things, it's depressing enough. And then I got to sit and watch my Indians get beat and be double depressed after. So,
man, you may not be ready for NFL to start.
Yeah, I may be or may not be.
You may have some struggles with the NFL season. We'll see how that goes for you, if that makes you any happier.
Well, I think that of course I'm this way every year about my Cleveland Browns. I'm the eternal optimist. Every year I think this is their year. I've been saying that ever since 1964. Anyway, I really do have high hopes. I just hope that there's going to be a football season, and the Browns on paper look as good as any team in the NFL. I mean they should have a tremendous team, and hopefully, if we don't have my buddy Myles Garrett hit anybody over the head with a helmet and he stays healthy and has a good year, this could be the Browns' year. Could be.
We'll be keeping an eye on them. I think we'll have a football season. If nothing else, they'll probably just power through it like baseball's doing. I mean, the Cardinals have played 5 games. The Reds in the same division have played 19. I don't know how they're going to make up all that, but...
Neither. I really don't either. And of course, you know, football is going to be totally different with all the contact and all of the, you know, there'll be no social distancing in a football game for sure. And they won't, I don't know, can you imagine that? I don't see if they're going to be out there slamming into each other and tackling each other. Why would you bother wearing a mask other than the kind that, the plastic kind that goes over the shield that goes over your football helmet? But we'll see how that plays out. I mean, we got just here in our own home, Peyton, our son here is, he's he's in the sixth grade. And they haven't really started in school, in classroom sessions. His class is going to be all virtual, all on the computer, but they're having football practice. He goes every day to football practice at a school, and the school's not even open. Nobody goes in the school except just they haven't put on pads or uniforms yet. But I mean, they're still practicing, saying that they're going to have a football season. So.
Now, that's odd. I understand financially why the major leagues are continuing, but I'm not – it's kind of odd that a sixth grader's doing that.
I know.
If the school's closed.
There's – everybody's so divided. There's two schools of thought. I just – I know from being around Peyton and the kids that they want things to be back to normal. They want to play football. They want to be out there. They want to be back in class. I mean, he's so disappointed that to hear that it's going to be all virtual and all done through a computer. He's just, the kids want to be in school. They want to be in class. But I can also understand the people, the parents, their safety of their kids is the main concern. And so it's just tough times that we are living through. And so,
I was talking to my brother and I was saying, would this be a great time to be a kid because you're not at school, or would this be a terrible time to be a kid? And he said, there's no sports to play. It'd be terrible. We'd be miserable. So I understand why he wants to get out there and play football.
Yeah, exactly. So hopefully things will peak out or get back to normal. And I just know, we're still, the WWE's still doing the wrestling shows every week, the Raw, SmackDown, and the NXT, and the pay-per-views. And so, but just, who knows when we'll be able to allow the fans back into the shows. I just hope it's sooner than later.
Yeah, interesting. They did announce that they're moving from the Performance Center to a long-term residency, they termed it, at the Amway Center in Orlando, which is, the NBA arena. And they're going to have, fans there digitally via Zoom, like the NBA is doing. So a lot of changes coming to WWE TV. Sounds like it's going to be a more bigger presentation coming forward.
Yeah, that will definitely make it a bigger presentation. A lot of people, I mean, they've done just an amazing job with, you know, continuing to put on these shows from the Performance Center. But if anybody were able to go to the Performance Center and actually see, you know, the size of this place, it's unbelievable that they've been able to do what they've done with such a limited space. I mean, to bring in all of the wrestlers and all of the crew and that sort of stuff in such a, you know, in such a small area in the ring, and to realize that all of these shows come from the same, you know, Raw, SmackDown, NXT, they're all coming from the exact same Performance Center. So, you know, they've done an amazing job so far, and it's very commendable that they've been able to do what they've done. But I think this will be tremendous to open it up a little bit and put it in a bigger venue. I think that'll make all the difference in the world in what the shows look and feel like.
And just to change scenery. You know, it's been so many hours of TV at the Performance Center with the 5 hours a week plus the pay-per-views. So I'm looking forward to this as well. All right.
Well, what else got to talk about? Anything, or is that it?
I think we've pretty much exhausted it today. We'll keep track of the Indians and the Browns, and we got this event on the 26th of September, and we're going to be talking about that every week.
Sounds good to me.
All right. Well, thank you for your time. Once again, condolences to everybody affected by the passing of Kamala, and we'll be back next week. Thanks, everybody.